Hello, and welcome back to Degish America Presents. I'm Ben Harl, and I'm so happy to have the opportunity to talk to you about the industry that I work in. On the last episode, we talked to Bob Warren about planning and preparing for your fumigation. We talked about the different types of fumigants available, how to inspect a facility with fumigation in mind, and then we spent some time talking about the bidding process. In today's episode, we're going to go a little deeper into fumigant selection. There are so many different types of fumigations that we need to conduct, and each one will have specific parameters that affect which fumigant you may want to choose. Today, we've invited Doug Bell from Cardinal Professional Products to help us determine which fumigant to choose and why. So, please help me welcome Doug to the podcast. Doug, how you doing today, buddy?
I'm doing good, my friend. How are you, sir? Good to talk to you.
I'm doing good. It's the middle of summer in Illinois right now, and it's very, very hot. So trying to brave the heat.
I'm very familiar with your area, as we have an office close to you. And I know sometimes you got to swim through that Illinois summer humidity, right?
Yeah, I'll tell you, I live right in the middle of the Corn Belt, and corn puts off more humidity, I swear, than Amazon rainforests. It's pretty brutal in the middle of the summer, especially when the corn's tall.
Yeah, well, I was out that way a couple weeks ago at our office there, and yeah, all the things that they've done to try and stay cool over the summer, I'm like, that makes perfect sense, because it gets quite muggy and it can be a little challenge to get stuff done. But yeah, it's good to catch up with you again, my friend.
Yeah. All right. So one of the things that I like to do right out of the gate, especially with first-time podcast guests, is to give them an opportunity to tell us a little bit about themselves. So if you could, that'd be great.
For sure. Yeah. I'm Doug Bell. I've been in the business for, 16, 17 years now. I started out doing fumigations and pest control inspections in Hawaii. So not a bad place to start your career, especially when, it's paradise for the people and the bugs there. So I got to learn a lot about a lot of stuff right off the bat. So I started my career working with Terminix in Hawaii, did that for, 9 years, I think. Got the opportunity to move to the manufacturing side when Dow sold Vicane and Profume to Douglas Products. That was 2015. And so had some good friends I'd been working with for years doing my thing in Hawaii, and they called it and said, hey, we've got an opening here. And the sale of the products just kind of made it a nice smooth transition. So started working for Douglas Products, did that for about 5 years, repped Vicane and Profume throughout the West Coast. From there, I moved to Colorado, did 2 years working for a pest control company and building up some of their infrastructure in the Denver area. And my good friend, Ed Hosoda, came out there actually to a Colorado Pest Control Association meeting and was like, hey, if you're ever interested in getting back onto more of the fumigation focus, give me a call and we'll talk. And, we kept in touch, and here I am. So now I'm based out of Northern California with Cardinal, and I've been a customer of Cardinal. I've been a manufacturer rep for Cardinal, and it was like, you know what? It's time to just join the team. And so working out of our Woodland office, my wife and daughter kind of keep me out of trouble, and they're loving Northern California. And yeah, it's great to be back on this side of the business, and, got a lot of good buddies on the Cardinal team, as you know, and everything's been working out great. I get to travel to all of our offices throughout the country. But yeah, that's kind of a little bit about me and where I'm at these days.
That's great. So a pretty well-rounded career, it sounds like.
It was fun. Yeah. I mean, I was telling somebody the other day about day number one of showing up to work in Hawaii. And they said, hey, you're going to roll out with the fume crew today. I'm like, heck yeah, let's do this. And so I go to get in the cab of the truck, and the guys looked at me and kind of had this weird look on their face. And they said, no. You go sit in the back of the truck on the tarps. I'm like, oh, got it. New guy. Yes, you got it. So hopped on the bed of the truck on the back of the tarps and headed off. And here we are 16 or 17 years later. But I remember that moment exactly. And yeah, the industry has been great to me and my family. And, it's been a pleasure getting to know everybody and learn a lot of stuff. I've had multiple licenses in multiple states. So I think it's been beneficial for me to move around and learn a lot.
Yeah, it's an absolutely wonderful industry to work in. I'm very, very happy that I work in the industry that I do. Every day is something new. And that's that. There's something to be said for that, for sure.
It's funny. I tell people, I'm like, man, the best part about our business, every day, new, exciting, challenging, something different. And then I have a caveat there. I go, yeah, but every day is something new. It's like, oh man, what's going to happen today? You know, what challenge is out there? What do I got to learn? What do I got to make work? And so, yeah, it is great. Never a dull moment. That's for sure.
Yeah, I have to say that's a fair point, though. You know, that there's a positive and a negative to that, I think, or I should say a positive and a challenge to that, you know, that every day there's something new comes along. So,
yeah, if I could just balance those out a little bit better, maybe I guess that's for the next 20 years of my career,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah. So I wanted to talk today about fumigant selection with you, because I think there's a lot of people out there, especially newer fumigators, you know, they don't really know a lot of the reasons why different fumigants are selected for different fumigation opportunities. But I wanted to start out, first of all, just by kind of asking you, what are some of the most common types of fumigations that are performed here in the United States?
For sure. And I think, too, with me being on the distribution side these days, it's really, I've kind of found a good spot for me to be in, because I'm all about providing tools for people's tool belts. And I think that's kind of what we do as a distributor. And I think, to your point of kind of those different types of fumigations that happen in the US, there's quite a bit, and there's a time and a place for everything. And you got to make sure you have the right tool. That being said, you know, we've got, I kind of maybe put it into three categories. So of course, there's soil fumigations, and all of our friends over at Tri-Cal that we work with do, you know, soil fumigations. Then there's structural fumigations. So your termites, your bed bugs, your powder post beetles, you know, underneath the tarps, you know, kind of that image of the circus coming to the neighborhood and
right,
the guys hopping out of the truck, and 35 minutes later, you know, the building's covered and people are like, what the heck? That was amazing. So the soil, then the structural, and then the commodity fumigations is a huge, huge part. And whether or not that's protecting the food supply for us here in the United States, whether or not that's, you know, sending shipments to other countries, almonds or walnuts or, you know, rice and things like that. I would say those are probably the three big, if we wanted to categorize them, right? And then I think when we look at the actual fumigants used in the commodity fumigation sector, we're looking at, you know, metal phosphides and cylinderized phosphine, methyl bromide, profume, which is sulfuryl fluoride, and then, you know, carbon dioxide. And so those are kind of, you know, I guess our main product lines that we would dip into, and then dial that down. And then what are we fumigating? Is it a warehouse? Is it a silo? Is it a cargo ship, a trailer, a container, tarp stack? Or is it something that we've started using a bit more, like these grain probacks that are kind of a newer type of benefit, I guess, to the industry for all of those different products to be used in. So I know that's probably a heck of an answer of a lot of stuff. So however you want to break that down, you let me know. But yeah, there's a lot of options for fumigators. And I would just encourage, you know, new people to the industry. For me, it was all about finding, not knowing everything about every one of these types or every one of these products, but just familiarizing myself with all of the different molecules, all of the different application methods, application rates, things like that. You know your label, right? The label's the law. We've always taught that a million times. So, you know, there's a lot when you really look at it, but when you're dialing it down, all of these are very specific in the way that the fumigations occur.
Yeah. And I want to drill down into each of these different fumigants since you mentioned too, as we continue our conversation. But one thing that I did want to mention too, you know, you mentioned the three kind of broad generalized types of fumigations that take place in the United States, you know, the soil fumigation, structural fumigation, and then commodity fumigation. One thing that I think a lot of people who maybe aren't in our industry don't know is when we talk about structural fumigation, we're talking more about like commercial or residential fumigation. I think a lot of people think, when they think structural fumigation, they think warehouses and things like that. But those are food and commodity related. So those, so like warehousing and food processing facilities, those fall more into the commodity category because what's being housed in those structures are commodities. So when we talk about structural fumigation, we're more talking about the commercial or residential market, correct?
Absolutely. Yeah. So that's a great point. And, you know, just kind of breaking out those three categories. Yeah. Structural is, you know, Mrs. Smith's house has termites. She found swarmers, you know, found wings. She saw some activity. Maybe Mr. Smith was doing his honeydew list and started pounding into the side of a wall and found some soft spots or found some droppings or something like that. An inspector would come out, identify the target pest, and then call for the treatment. And 9 times out of 10, a single family home, whole house fumigation is the right call for those types of residential. And then, yeah, commercial, you've got certain areas, I think California, Florida, Hawaii, probably the big three states that do most of those structural fumigations with sulfuryl fluoride, Vicaine.
Yeah. And that's always the way that I kind of define those big three that you're talking about. And it seemed to me like that was kind of an industry standard. But when I talk with my friends about what I do and I explain that, I think sometimes they get a little confused. They're like, well, isn't a warehouse a structure? I'm like, well, yeah, it is. But depending on the kind of warehouse it is, it's right. It has commercial belongings in it. So in our terminology, it's not considered a structural fumigation. It's considered some type of a commodity fumigation because there's commodity inside of it.
Totally. I think my wife would say, I'm the guy that at a party in the neighborhood, we're at a barbecue or something. And a couple of folks, they're like, you deal with bugs? You deal with this? How do you do this? And what about this? And yeah, for them to for folks outside the industry to understand some of our terminology and classifications, they just start scratching their head and they're like, wow, I'm glad we have good people like you in that industry because you guys run with it and you guys know what's up. So
yeah,
totally feel you on it.
All right. So I now want to kind of drill down into some of these specific fumigants that you mentioned and kind of talk about some of the selection process that goes into using these different fumigants, you know, the pros and the cons and where you may want to use them and where you may not want to use them. And I'll start just right at the top of the list with phosphine. So what do you think goes into selecting phosphine as a fumigant of choice?
Yeah, fantastic. We'll start with phosphine. I think for all of these, there's a time and a place for everything. To use that tool belt analogy, you know, if you show up to do some work with just a hammer, not much you're really going to get accomplished. But if you've got a whole tool belt full, there's a time and a place to use each one of those tools, and there's benefits to those tools in different situations. Same thing for fumigants. And obviously, phosphine's one that's been around a long time. I mean, you probably have more of the statistics on that of how long it's actually been used as a registered pesticide, but my guess is it's probably the longest out of the other list that I kind of threw together. And so got a lot of advantages. I think the labels for those products are really good. There's certain labels in just the pest control industry in general, whether it's gel bait or a spray this or that. I mean, certain labels are angled at these certain fumigations better. And so I think the label itself is just very well written. It's easy to understand. It's not too complicated. You know, there's that history of folks that have used, you know, metal phosphides and phosphine for years and years and years. We work with plenty of folks that do their own, whether it's a mill or a warehouse or a farm or something like that, or we deal with, you know, providers that do it for those different sectors. And just that accessibility of the label, the ease of understanding and how to apply, I think is the first thing that everybody kind of goes to when they're talking about phosphine. And it's just very clear, very well understood. And that might be because it's been around the longest. You know, you've got folks who are 60s and 70s trying to maybe retire at some point. But, you know, we've got probably two or three generations of folks that's all been passed down. And so there's that knowledge that's been passed down from uncle to dad to son or something like that. And so great history with those labels. I think the list of commodities on those labels is extensive. You can do a lot of stuff with that, whether it's raw kind of agricultural commodities, whether it's processed foods. I mean, when you look at some of the labels, right, it'll say processed foods and then it says other processed foods. And it's like, okay, well, there's a lot that can be kind of under that umbrella. You know, you've got non-food commodities that are on there. So that just allows you to use that tool in many more situations than you could on certain other products. There's limitations on some, but I think from a pro standpoint, the label's simple, easy to understand. The commodities are pretty varied. And so you've got a lot of bullets, I guess, to kind of throw at that. And, you know, I guess the last thing, as I'm thinking through, some of the special permits for transportation. So there's some benefits to that. And then real quick, I guess for now, we don't have buffer zones for those products. We'll kind of see where the world takes us over the course of the next 6 months or year. But I think, you know, just off the top of my head, those would be some of the key things that make that a beneficial product to use in our business.
Yeah, and I agree with everything that you just said. One other pro that I would mention too is I think phosphine's one of the most inexpensive fumigants that's on the market as well, which makes it pretty attractive, especially when people, you know, need good efficacy, they need good insect or pest control, but they need it on a budget. Phosphine is a great tool that you can use in those situations.
Yeah, I think that's definitely one of the things that, you know, as, you know, for myself, who's worked for different providers throughout my career, I mean, we all got budgets to work with, right?
And yeah.
So, yeah, you have to, it's a great point. I mean, when you're really setting up, okay, how do we do this job the best for the customer? How do we make it cost effective? How do we make sure that there's control of the pest population, you know, good efficacy? You know, safety, you got to take into consideration all these different things. And so, yeah, price for sure is definitely something that folks put into their bids and their budgeting, whether they're doing it themselves or if somebody else is doing it for them.
Yeah. And then some of the challenges that we have with phosphine as well, too, come to mind when it comes to challenges with phosphine and some of the reasons why you may pick another fumigant. One of the first challenges is that in some cases, it may cause corrosion on soft metals. So if you have a facility that has a lot of digital equipment, computers, lab equipment, things like that, you either have to remove or protect that equipment if you're going to use phosphine in those environments. And that's not always a very cost-effective or viable option for people. So I think a lot of times in those circumstances, people may lean toward, you know, maybe sulfuric fluoride is an option.
Yeah, great point. I think that's something that we train on heavily. That's, you know, our sales reps throughout the country go out to various locations, and that's something that they look at, right? If it's one of those where they walk in and they're like, whoa, there's a lot of equipment in here. And is the time to wrap those things up and put it out of the way? Is it worth just maybe just switching to a different product? So that's definitely something that I think folks are aware of. Like I said, we train on that. We don't want anybody to go in there to a situation and then come out and say, hey, the customer said our $700,000 piece of equipment is fried. What's going on? So yeah, that's something that people need to be aware of and need to put into their thought process of picking the right job. I think the only one, you know, off the top of my head, you know, there's obviously phosphine resistance that's been talked about for years and years. And I think there's ways to do things the right way, which I know you guys train a lot on. We train a lot on making sure that folks understand when that fumigation actually starts. And I think making sure that we're keeping those parts per million at that kind of sweet spot. I know that's a term that's been coined by some folks, keeping those PPM at that sweet spot for the allotted amount of time. And if you do it and there's no corrosion issues, bang, problem solved, no problem, move to the next job, right? So when you talk about challenges, there's also a lot of ways to get around those challenges. And that's why I think, you know, us at Cardinal, we're there to help people talk them through that. And so we never want folks to just think, oh man, I got to make this decision. What do I do? Hey, give us a call. Let's walk through some of these. Us being in the business long enough, you kind of have that checklist of like, okay, let me ask you these first three questions, and then we can kind of go deeper as to what fumigant would work appropriately for that situation.
Right. Yeah. And I know one of the more popular things when it comes to phosphine resistance, which first of all, a lot of phosphine resistance, you're right, can be combated by, you know, understanding how phosphine works, making sure that you have the proper parts per million inside the treated area for the entirety of the exposure period, making sure that you're going for the right application rate. So there's a lot of ways that you can use phosphine, even in areas where resistance is suspected, and you can still have some success. But in some instances, a lot of people will choose to cycle in at least one other fumigant into those areas to kind of combat that potential for resistance. And really, I mean, there's only one other fumigant that can be widely used for that purpose, and that's sulfurofluoride. So I wanted to ask you, so it's a great segue into talking about sulfurofluoride, which is the next one on my list. So I was hoping you could kind of tell us a little bit about sulfurofluoride and some of the pros and cons with it.
Yeah, SF is fantastic. I mean, I've spent 5 years, you know, working with sulfurofluoride as kind of my sole focus, whether it was on the structural side with the Vicane and then the commodity side post-harvest with Profume. And so, you know, kind of focusing on the Profume side, and it's still a little on the Vicane side as well. It's they have this kind of terminology of precision fumigation. And I think SF as a tool is pretty cool because you can use it in different ways. If you need a short fumigation and you've got a boat waiting for product to get across wherever, or if you've got a customer that needs to kind of churn and burn and get back into a warehouse or something like that, SF gives you the flexibility to do a shorter fumigation. So we'll say from a shorter fumigation, that obviously means more fumigant. And so when we talked about cost, is that the most cost effective for that situation? Well, if there's no other options and they need to get back into that building in 3 days, that's your option. And then, yeah, the cost is worth it. On the flip side, if you want and you have extra time and you're using sulfurofluoride, so then you can kind of extend your exposure time, which means you're going to use less fumigant. So maybe at certain times, maybe there's a shutdown or something like that where you're able to allot extra time. Well, the end user or whatever, the end customer, is going to be able to save some money on product and be able to let those ounce hours build up over time, as opposed to doing, a quicker fumigation. So I think that's probably the biggest and probably first thing that pops into my head is you can really be precise. You really can dial it in from a timing standpoint, from a, you know, number of cylinders that you need for a job. And then like we kind of mentioned, I guess this is kind of good segues of, you know, that non-corrosive. And so, yeah, some of those situations where there's too much computer equipment or areas that might be susceptible to corrosion from other products, the SF can go in there, not a problem.
Right. Yeah. And one other thing that I wanted to say too, and I really like that you mentioned that you can do a shorter fumigation. And just as an example, when you fumigate, of course, everybody has to clear out of the structure that's being fumigated for the entirety of the fumigation until it's deemed clear for reentry by the fumigators. So if you have a facility that every 24 hours their production shut down, for an example, it costs them $100,000 in production loss for every 24 hours, but it only costs an extra $10,000 to fumigate in 24 hours rather than 48 hours, well, it's a no-brainer for that customer. Of course, they're going to choose to do a 24-hour fumigation because it's cheaper for the additional gas compared to the production loss.
Yeah, totally. And I've been on both of those sides where, yeah, you know, and I've had a customer actually that we worked with where at one point during the year, they were like, hey, we got to get in, we got to get out. You know, it kind of came up unplanned, I guess. And so it was like, all right, cool. Let's do quick curative. Let's do some other things throughout the year, maybe some foggings and whatnot. And then they kind of had their towards the end of the year, I want to say maybe Thanksgiving-ish time or whatever, where they had more of a scheduled shutdown that they used SF as well. And they were able to use less gas from a quote unquote sales standpoint. they really appreciated having the flexibility. They knew, hey, they ran into a curative issue. Bam, we got to do this quick. It's going to cost more. During that time, we did also start to map out kind of this plan for their facility. And when they heard, oh, wait, so if we just maintain this throughout the year, you know, using just general pest control, integrated pest management tactics throughout the year, then that kind of planned fumigation, it's actually going to cost them less. And they were able to maintain it. Worked out great because it was Thanksgiving. So they had like 5 days, I think, that we had the facility. So again, there's a time and a place for everything. And I think, yeah, SF can really have some solid benefits in that precision fumigation that's available with that molecule.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, sulfurofluoride, I mean, what a wonderful molecule, what a wonderful fumigant. You know, I really can't think of a whole lot of challenges when it comes to that. But I mean, the only one that I can think of really that comes to mind right off the top of my head is that there's a lot of restrictions with utilizing it with processed foods. Processed foods really aren't included in on the sulfurofluoride label. There are some caveats to that. Sometimes processed foods are allowed to be fumigated if they're deemed impractical to remove from the structure. But for the most part, processed foods are really not considered able to be fumigated with sulfurofluoride.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great point. And I mean, it goes back to that extensive list of commodities, you know, for phosphine and the different labeling restrictions between the products. So absolutely, that's something that's out there. I would encourage folks, you know, because there's documentation on that, what it means, you know, for that impractical to remove. And I think it's probably a case-by-case situation.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And as we talk through all of these products, there's resources for everybody, whether it's a Cardinal, whether it's a Degish rep or a Profume rep. Like if you have these situations that come up, you know, as a fumigator or as a operations guy at a processing plant or something, reach out to those folks. And I think it's a perfect example because yeah, there's some gray there with processed foods for Profume and you reach out to your Douglas rep or you reach out to Cardinal and we kind of put some plans behind that. Is it feasible? And I think that's one of the things that I guess when we circle back to things that we would tell new fumigators or new people getting into the business, you've got resources and you can reach out to them on a case-by-case situation. You know, there's some of these fumigations that have been done for every year, twice a year for the last 15 years. Okay, yeah, you've got that down. But those one-off cases, or hey, man, I don't know. Do we have to move this out? Can it be there? Yeah, reach out to your reps and they're a wealth of knowledge. We can always help and kind of guide folks through that process. The only other thing I guess I would say on SF from kind of a challenge is buffer zones. And there's some buffer zones in certain areas, definitely in California. That's a challenge, but it's something that, again, work with the reps. We can help you through that process, help you understand it, help you find ways to maybe take those buffer zones down where they're more manageable. And, you know, if you've got a building 200 feet across the yard and nothing's connected and stuff, how do you make that plan to make sure that folks are safe in a way, but they can still do work in those warehouses. But yeah, that's a great, you know, one that you brought up. And I think the buffer zones would be the only other thing that I would kind of mention as a challenge with SF.
I'm glad you mentioned reaching out to the resources because, you know I mentioned that they have that caveat, you know, you can only fumigate processed foods unless they're deemed impractical to remove. I don't want to give anybody the impression that if you are being tasked with fumigating like a processing facility that you cannot use sulfurofluoride. That's one of the reasons why it's so important to reach out to those resources because you'd be surprised at how often you can fumigate those facilities with sulfurofluoride because of the impracticality of removing the processed foods, or there's different ways that they can be segregated or removed in some cases, but the representatives in the industry can help you deem that. So don't ever walk into a processing facility and just assume that it flat cannot be fumigated with sulfurofluoride.
Yeah, there's a time and a place for everything. And I think one of the things that has helped me be, you know, fairly successful in the business is all of the resources that we have. And understanding who those powerful folks are, who those instrumental folks are, getting to know them, creating those relationships, explaining to the reps my business and, hey, this is kind of what I'm looking to do. Can you give me guidance? And that's been a blessing for me to have all of the friends that I have in the industry that can help me walk through different products and different situations, whether it's, you know, a PhD, whether it's a rep, whether it's someone on the business side of maybe one of these organizations, or even just, you know, other fumigators that have gone through the processes. So that's one of the great parts about our industry is all the resources that we have, good people, hardworking people that know their stuff. And so, you know, we don't have to know everything all the time. We just got to know the right people to call.
Yeah, I agree with that. I've relied on many, many resources in my career as well. So I wanted to also ask you about, I guess this isn't really a new fumigant. I mean, it's been around for a long time, but from my understanding, there's a fairly new label with this fumigant that's on the market that allows it to be used in a much broader fashion than it's been used in previous years and decades for that matter. And that's carbon dioxide. You know, with the growing interest in organic foods in the consumer markets in the United States, being able to protect the organic foods, it seems, at least in my opinion, it seems like the demand for protecting those foods is also growing. And we don't have a lot of options when it comes to pest control for organic foods. But carbon dioxide is one of them because organic foods can be fumigated with carbon dioxide. So I wanted to talk a little bit about CO2, carbon dioxide as a fumigant. And maybe you can kind of give us some ideas on how it's used in the industry.
For sure. And you're absolutely right. Over the course of the last year, 18 months or so, we've gotten a lot of requests. We've gotten a lot of information that's been going back and forth between fumigators and industry. And there's been some changes. And yeah, I like how you mentioned the label part, because carbon dioxide has been used for, gosh, decades. And you just would go and find some carbon dioxide and fire in the hole, you're good to go. I think now with that focus on organic, having a good labeled product was essential. And LeafaTech has been able to do that with their product, IGI CO2. Here at Cardinal, we're their exclusive distributor for this product. And IGI CO2 is labeled for two parts. I'll give the quick kind of dissertation on that. But the first one is burrowing rodents. And so you can do those treatments typically with like a 20-pound cylinder on a cart with their eliminator equipment. So that's the first part of that label, is the burrowing rodents. The second part is that fumigation part. And so that's something that we've been partnering with them on. Again, it's an EPA labeled product. So it's totally different than what's been used in the past. I think a lot of folks are kind of looking around like, hey, are you using the right product now? And so for those out there that are just using carbon dioxide that they get from a local distributor, you know, that's been fine in the past. Moving forward, you know, there's going to be a lot of focus on using that EPA labeled product, IGI CO2. It is a pretty wide open label. So like you mentioned, it's organically certified. We've got all the documentation from LeafaTech on that. We've been doing some trials with it, and we've got quite a few different companies throughout the country that are actively pursuing organic products because now we've got this EPA labeled tool, and it's really starting to take off. And in conjunction with another product, GrainPro, I mentioned that a little earlier with the bags. CO2's, I guess one of the challenges is sealing and keeping that CO2 in there. CO2 wants to go once you put it in. And so being able to contain that, again, where there's a will, there's a way. I've got folks that have kind of engineered their containers that can hold that. There's a whole process. Obviously, we have training and development on how to do that. We can walk folks through new experiences with the product, but that's probably one of the challenges. And then the GrainPro bag really is zipper tight. I don't know how to explain it, like a Ziploc bag for fumigation.
Right.
But it really works well. So we've got folks utilizing that equipment in conjunction with the CO2. We've also got controller monitors that we're working on that will actually, you know, monitor the percentage of CO2 and when it dips below what you need, We've got these controller monitors that actually can apply, you know, the ad gas for you. So that labor intensive part of coming back and adding gas is kind of taken out of the element. So you're right, it's made a big push, and recently CO2 is becoming more and more prevalent throughout the country. IGI CO2 does a great job. John Murphy over at LifaTech promoting the product and working with our folks. We just had a brand new CO2 customer probably about 2 weeks ago, had three containers. He's like, hey, it's all organic stuff. I want to give it a shot and kind of put a bid in. He got it. We had our guy, William Woodhouse, go down there and knock it out for him. But, you know, it's a 4-day process, right? So you got to have that hold time. But yeah, they were able to knock that out and had a successful CO2 fumigation. So it's coming. It's here. There's ways to do it. There's trainings that are available. There's hands-on field training. I encourage folks, if you're looking for possibly an opportunity to maybe add some revenue to your fumigation department or team, maybe look at those organic products. And now we've got a way to handle that challenge.
You know, and one of the biggest pros for CO2 is the fact that it can be used on organic products. I mean, what a huge benefit that is to the organic industry, which is something we haven't been able to do a lot with because of the restrictions. But then, like you said, one of the challenges with using CO2 is it's probably, in my opinion, the most difficult fumigant to keep contained inside of a structure. You know, it takes such a high percentage to get the efficacy that you desire, and you have to hold it for a very specific amount of time to achieve that efficacy as well. And that's challenging. So it's good to hear that people are working on finding ways to keep the CO2 inside these fumigated structures for the appropriate amount of time that are a little bit cheaper, easier, less labor intensive. So I'm glad to hear that there's a lot of research going into that.
Yeah, we've been playing with a lot of stuff. I mean, we talked about time and concentration, for lack of kind of more specific terms, but you got to be able to contain it. You got to hold it for the right amount of time with all of these products. And with the CO2 probably being one of the most active molecules, that's a challenge. And yeah, we put a lot of time and effort. Ed Hosoda's done tons of research and really kind of spearheaded our efforts to stay on top of that market and really be the leader in it. And so it's been fun. And again, if there's an opportunity that comes out there, it's kind of like, don't just put it to the side like, oh, it's organic. Cannot, you know, like just ask, reach out. Hey, is this a possibility? Maybe it's as simple as, you know, they only do X amount of organic every month or whatever. And so you could just bring your GrainPro bag to the facility and fill that up and boom, 4 days later, it's good to go. And you come back in another month and utilize that GrainPro bag for other things during that time. So definitely got options, definitely got new technology that's coming. I'm excited. It'll be interesting to see over the course of the next year or next 18 months, how quickly everybody kind of gets in touch with the CO2. It's one of the things about fumigators, you know us, man, we can pretty much solve everything. It's just a, yeah, a matter of the right teamwork and the right ideas. And it's been a great collaboration with all these different companies to provide an extra tool for the toolbox.
Okay, so there's only one fumigant left that I want to talk about, you know, and it's kind of funny, you know, we're talking about CO2 kind of, even though it's been around for a while with a new label, it's kind of the up and coming fumigant, especially for organic fumigations. Now I want to completely flip that on its head and talk about one of the fumigants that's been kind of on its way out for decades, for right, lack of a better way of putting it. And that's methyl bromide. So I was hoping you could just kind of talk a little bit about methyl bromide and when it's the right time to consider it.
Yeah, bromide's been fantastic for the industry over the years and is still a very viable commodity fumigant. I had someone come to our location and they looked at the cylinder and they go, "What? What is that?" And I'm like, "Oh, it's bromide." And they're like, "I thought bromide was gone." I'm like, "No, bromide's not gone. It's just there's very restricted uses to it now."
Yeah. And the interesting thing about methyl bromide, well, first of all, it's being phased out because it's considered to be an ozone depleter. So people have been working on phasing this out for several decades now, actually, or at least a couple of decades. But it was such a good broad spectrum fumigant that we just really haven't found like an apples to apples replacement for methyl bromide quite yet.
Yeah, for sure. I think there's been so much chatter and talk about this, yeah, for decades, and it's still viable. It's still used every day. There obviously are those limitations between just the quarantine and the pre-shipment treatments. And so, you know, MB used to be used on homes. Okay, well, we had an alternative for that. And so MB is not used for homes anymore. So these opportunities, these other products that have come to market has been fantastic. I think folks are doing research every single day to look at all kinds of different treatment methods. But when it comes down to it, we have the tools that we have for a reason. And we've done so much research and we still need this product. The world needs this product. You know, I'm in California today and California is a very big ag economy. And it's very important to have these tools like methyl bromide. And to be honest, it's very important that us as fumigators or folks that are using these products follow the label, do the right things, you know, ask your resources for assistance and clarification. If you ever get in a situation where you're like, I'm not sure if I can use methyl bromide for this, phone call away or a website away. I mean, folks can literally go on and just check. Oh, okay. Is this country? Oh, it is. Great. We can use this. Cool. And with all the different restricted use permitting that's out there, all of the different training requirements, all of the different help that's available from the resources we were talking about, we can still use that product for those two treatment methods.
Yeah, and methyl bromides, you know, I'd say it's right up there with phosphine as one of the oldest fumigants, but whereas phosphine still used, methyl bromides being phased out. But I wish we had some time to talk about all the other alternative fumigants that are being researched in the United States right now, because there are several. And I think what we're going to end up having is, as some of these newer fumigants that are being researched become prevalent in the United States over the next 5, 10, 15, 20 years, we'll see less and less of that methyl bromide being used. Because even though we haven't found an apples to apples replacement, like you said, all these other alternative fumigants are chipping away at different market segments that methyl bromide has been used in or is currently being used in. So eventually we will see it completely go away. We're just not quite ready for that yet.
Yeah, I'm a fan of if it ain't broke, don't fix it, yeah, right? Kind of thing. And I think, you know, yeah, there's a lot of folks looking at alternatives to all kinds of different pesticides and fumigants and different treatments. But, you know, we really have to do our due diligence in understanding anything from the economical kind of setbacks that if we were to just take something off the market, how does that impact the U.S. economy? How does that impact California economy or a specific state? How does that impact, you know, farmers, growers and folks like that? And I think that's where we really need to spend a lot of time, is understanding all of the things that go into that. And then, gosh, you know, there's MBAO, there's all these organizations that have done a lot of research. We've got, gosh, probably 20 years of research. Sometimes we don't have to reinvent the wheel. Maybe let's look at some of the research that's been done over the last 20 years, and it can kind of maybe say, okay, maybe we're not ready for certain alternatives and certain applications of certain products. So a lot going on. It's an exciting time to be in the business. It's fun to continue to get better at utilizing the products that we have. So that's a big focus of where we're at with our company, and where I've kind of been brought up in the field and in the industry is, you know, the label's the law, follow, you know, use your PPE, do your due diligence on all your documentation and your FMPs, all of those things will continue to help us maintain the current tools that we need to do business.
In your opinion, is there ever a time when performing a fumigation should not be considered?
Yes. I think, you know, when you look at the way pest control has been evolving over the last 20, 30 years, integrated pest management has been a fantastic mission for a lot of us in the pest control business. But part of IPM is fumigation. If you see one red flower beetle in a warehouse, is it time to call for a fumigation? Probably not. You know? But there's all the things that we have to do, whether it's, you know, utilizing monitoring, you know, pheromone traps, things like that ahead of time, proactive pest control, sanitation, all of these different things that have to go into your overall pest management plan. And I think ultimately, to answer the question, you know, is there ever a time when performing a fumigation should not be considered? Sure, there's other things that you should look at first. That being said, it's always great to have this nice tool to come in to then utilize one of these products for a fumigation. It's almost like that start fresh. You know, you can't hide every nook and cranny where every little beetle or a moth or whatever is doing their thing. So you need those hard resets, and that's where fumigation is a fantastic tool. And I think as fumigators, as pest control providers, we all kind of work together to make sure that we're finding those good times. Like, hey, it's time to call for a fume. We got to do it. And really just putting that into your IPM program as those hard resets is something that I've seen work very effectively for lots of different organizations, lots of different facilities. But you got to do your due diligence on the front end. And I've always been told, if you're not being proactive, you're not doing actual pest control. Otherwise, you know, then if you're being reactive, you're just killing bugs at that point. But actual pest control is all about being proactive and doing all those things I mentioned, from sanitation to monitoring to other kinds of proactive treatments. But eventually you're going to get to a fumigation for most facilities. And that's when they reach out to us and we help them through that process.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned IPM, you know, integrated pest management, being a method that we utilize these days in choosing the right time to perform the fumigations, because it shouldn't always be the first tool that you pull out of that tool belt. But I also think that, you know, just from a logistical perspective, sometimes it's not the best idea to perform a fumigation. So I always, when I go into a facility to conduct some kind of an inspection for fumigation, I always think first, you know, can a fumigation be conducted safely? And then I follow that up with, can a fumigation be conducted effectively? So from a safety perspective, can the facility even be fumigated without risk to bystander safety? If the answer to that is no, and there's no way to solve that situation, then the facility really can't be fumigated. And then effective too. Is the facility or the commodity, can it be fumigated? Is it structurally sound enough to be fumigated? Are you going to have issues with the fumigant leaking out before any kind of lethal dose can be applied? You know, so yeah. If the facility is not structurally sound, fumigation may not be able to be considered either. Or maybe the product needs to be moved or segregated or tarped. You know, all of those things have to be considered. So you can't just walk into a facility with the expectation of fumigation. You really have to think about things from that safety perspective and then also that effectiveness perspective too.
Yeah, it's wild. You talk about going into some of these facilities, and those of us who know that some of these facilities are just massive and they're huge and there's a lot going on and there's a lot of moving parts to it. I think back to when I was on the Big Island in Hawaii, and one of the first kind of commodity fumigations I did with some macadamia nuts over there. My way of looking at things, gosh, 15 years later or something like that, is totally different, right? I walked in and I was like, oh, heck yeah, we can do this. And I'm like, oh my gosh, we did, and it was perfectly fine. But I look at things differently now. So some of the things that you mentioned, I see those clearer now than I did 15 years ago. And I know what to look for. And there's a lot of qualified folks in our industry that probably are way more adapted at seeing those things than even I am. But you got to take into consideration all those different factors, because you don't want people just doing stuff to do stuff. That's not what we're in the business of doing. We're in the business of solving people's problems, helping them out, helping them with their business. And so when the time is right for a fumigation, it's time to make that call. And there's a bunch of stuff that you go through to kind of check off that list. And once you get there, it's like, all right, cool, fire in the hole, here we go.
Yeah, from a safety perspective, I think it's better to look at each fumigation when you first initially walk into it with the assumption, you kind of have to assume that a facility can't be fumigated and then prove it can be. That's really a good way to look at it. Because then if you can prove that a facility or commodity can be fumigated, whether it's from a regulatory perspective, a legal perspective, label perspective, a structural integrity perspective, once you prove that it can be fumigated, then the safety and the efficacy and all of that stuff just kind of falls into place with it.
Yeah, I look at us as I'm here to help kind of thing. Yeah. And so if by me being there and doing a site visit, by learning about their processes, whether it's what time our doors open and what time our doors close. Like, how can we help? And if I can help on just saying, hey, this area is disgusting and you need to work on sanitation, yeah, that yeah. might take care of your problem. Well, then I've helped that customer and that's my job. If throughout that learning process, I tell my 11-year-old daughter, I say, hey, my job's pretty cool. I get to like be like almost like a private investigator on all these different opportunities. I got to really dig in and find out the who, the what, the when, the where, the why behind all of these facilities. And it's my job to listen and learn about those processes that they have going on and then find a way to help them. And a lot of times that way does end up being fumigation, but there's definitely all those things we can do to help them along the way. So yeah, I look at it as I'm here to help. Tell me what you got. We'll come up with the best situation or the best solution for you.
Yeah, that's a great way to look at it. So I only have one question left for you, and I always ask some version of this question to every podcast guest. What advice would you give a new fumigator about preparing for a fumigation?
Something's going to happen that you don't plan for. I would say that first yeah. and foremost. Whatever you can do to familiarize yourself with that property, with that facility, is hugely important. And there's probably not enough you can do in pre-planning because something will always come up. But people are like, oh, the hardest part is to seal off this building or whatever. Well, if you've done all of your due diligence and you know where all the leaky parts are and you have the right equipment, and maybe you know that every bay door is X feet by X feet, and ideally you're pre-cutting all of that stuff. So then when you're on the job, you're really just sealing those off as opposed to showing up and then kind of measuring those things. Then you're behind the eight ball, right? And so pre-measure, measure twice, cut once.
Yeah.
Those types of things, be really engaging with the people who are at the facility all the time. If you've been there for 2 hours on a walkthrough, you don't know as much as Bob, the operations manager, who's there 12 hours a day for the last 20 years. He can give you a lot of insight. So really just the pre-work. And, we've got a pretty sweet FMP on our website that really dials down that process. And so once I got really good at utilizing an FMP as kind of like my playbook, my fumigations got easier. And I think that would be probably the easiest advice I could give is get good at that pre stuff, get good at FMPs, get good at documenting and notating all of these things. Because the day of when you've got a truckload of gas showing up, there's a lot going on. And so whatever you can do ahead of time to pre-plan will save you, if anything, the stress and anxiety of yeah. just getting through it. But it'll also make you more effective. It'll make you safer. It'll make you your customer or your whoever that facility owners and operators are. They're going to know this cat's a professional and knows what they're doing. They came with a game plan. They executed the game plan. Yeah, the wind changed or weather changed or, hey, we couldn't turn over the facility for an extra 4 hours because we were still running the last on that line. That happens. And so to be able to take care of those situations professionally and make it effective for those folks, that's all due to the pre-planning. So that would be by far the biggest, easiest advice that I could give to any new fumigator.
That's great advice. I'm glad you shared it. Well, Doug, that's all I got for you. I really appreciate your time today. Thanks.
Yeah, good catching up with you, brother. Thanks for the opportunity, and I'm sure I'll see you on the road soon.
Yep, I'm sure you will. Thanks. I want to thank Doug for giving us some insight into choosing the proper fumigant. Knowing which fumigant to select and how it can affect the commodity or structure to be fumigated is a critical part of the planning process. On the next episode of Degish America Presents, we'll discuss some of the equipment you'll need in order to conduct a safe and effective fumigation. Making sure you have the correct type and amount of equipment available and on hand is going to make your life as a fumigator so much easier. And remember, if you have a question you'd like for us to answer, you can feel free to email us at podcast@degishamerica.com. You can also find us on our website at degishamerica.com or on all of the main social media outlets. So until next time, I'm Ben Harl, and I hope you have a safe and terrific day.